What I want to do is talk about a discontented person. And then I'm going to talk about a content person. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at the children of Israel because they are a great example of a group of people that are content. I want to read for you just out of Exodus 1. You don't need to turn there. What the children of Israel wanted to go back to. They were in the wilderness, and it was hot, it was hard, and it was not comfortable, but this is what they really wanted to go back to. So the Egyptians put slave masters over the Israelites to oppress them with forced labor, and they built places as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more the Israelites were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in their field. In all their hard labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all the people, every boy that is born of the Israelites, you must throw into the river. Those people wanted to go back to be slaves where they were treated ruthlessly. Those Egyptians did not give a rip about the Israelites. Man, they didn't care when they were sick. They didn't care when there was sorrow in the family. They didn't care anything about them. They just worked them as hard as they could. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. And God heard their groaning, remembered their covenant, and was concerned about them. And he did lead them out of Egypt. Well, that says some things for us. One of the things the people in the children of Israel did as they were walking across the desert is they wanted to go back to Egypt. They wanted to go back to that mess. And you know, that's a lot like us. We have the grass is greener on the other side of the fence syndrome. The past looks so much better than today. Man, we had better friends then, or we had more friends, or we had friends that didn't fail us. These friends I have now, you know, they can't do things with me. They're not fun. They just fail me. Or my roommate. I have a roommate that I cannot stand. I don't want to go home. I want to leave as soon as I can. And if it could just be the old days when I had my old roommate, man, she was great. When I had my old friends, they were great. Or maybe I feel like I felt real good about myself in the past. But the problem is I forget all the bad things that had happened. And all I remember are the good things. I don't remember how hard it was. The Israelites didn't remember that their life was bitter. They were treated ruthlessly. That's what they wanted to go back to. And a lot of times that's how we are. Sometimes people who are discontent want to look ahead to the future. Man, I can't wait till I graduate. Man, then I'll have some money. I can't wait till I graduate. Then I'll have some time. Man, I can do what I want to do. I can go traveling. I can see people who I want to see. I can walk with God. But the future looks much better. Or maybe you just want to be somebody else. A discontent person just wants to be like somebody else. Their situation looks a lot better than mine. Maybe if you're dating, you wish you were dating somebody else. Or maybe if you're not dating, you wish you were. Anything but just being content with what you have. Another characteristic of a discontent person is that they complain. Man, those Israelites complained. They grumbled at every chance. And a lot of times that is what we're like when we're discontent. We complain. Man, life is hard. This semester is a drag. That professor, I mean, he thinks his class is the only class I'm taking. And this, you know, is bad. You complain. A third characteristic of somebody who's discontent is they've lost sight of their goal. You know, God did not take the Israelites out into the wilderness so they'd be comfortable and so life would be easy. The goal for the Israelites was to get through the desert to the promised land, to Canaan. And that's what God wanted them to do. And he took them through the wilderness so they could learn some lessons. He wanted them to learn to be obedient to him. He wanted them to learn to trust him. Man, he was going to teach them how to trust him because he provided their basic needs, their food, their water. He provided their clothes. Psalm says that their shoes never wore out. They were in the desert at least 40 years, and those shoes did not wear out. Well, it wasn't because they made great shoes. It was because God was keeping those shoes together. God provided their basic needs. But not only that, He provided a cloud to guide them. Not only that, He provided protection from the Egyptians. And God wanted them to look ahead to Canaan, and while they were walking through the wilderness, to learn some lessons so that when they got to Canaan, they could overthrow those people in Canaan and take the land. Well, when they saw the people in Canaan, I mean, they thought, man, we can't overtake these people. And their goal was thwarted because they had not trusted God and learned the lessons they needed to. And what I wonder is, as we're traveling along this earth, I wonder what lessons God is trying to teach us. And all we are concerned about is our comfort. And all we want is life to be a little easier, a little nicer, a little better. And we don't care that God is really trying to teach us some important things. He wants us to be like Him. And our goal isn't particularly to have an easy life. It's to walk with God, whatever that means. And so we may lose total sight of what the purpose of our life is because we're so concerned about how comfortable we are today. Another characteristic of someone who's discontent is that their fellowship with God is becoming less and less a part of their life. The time they spend with Him is less and less. Their thoughts about Him is less and less. And it is just beginning to slip away. And if that begins to happen to you, you need to stop and ask yourself, hey, am I moving away from a relationship with God? Somebody who's discontent is not just dealing with circumstances. Circumstances, it's not a circumstance problem, it's a heart problem. And they're people who are looking to other things besides God to meet their needs. And there are three things that they're looking at. One is possessions. They all start with P's. One is possessions, one is position, and one is the providence of God, which just means your circumstances. Some of us have probably met people that by the age of 30, their goal is to be a millionaire. But probably most people in this room, that's not their goal. Their goal is just to have a little bit more and a little bit better. I want a little better car. I want a few more clothes. I want things to be a little easier. And it's not a great amount of difference, but just a little better. Luke 12:15 says that life does not consist in the abundance of possessions, which means I may get all the possessions that I think I want, but I'll still want more. Those possessions will not satisfy, will not satisfy the need in me to be content. The second area would be position. I want to be recognized. And in 3 John 8, it says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will have nothing to do with us. This man wanted to be first. And isn't that a lot like us? We want to be recognized. Man, I want people to know who I am. I want to be the brain of the classroom. I want to be the funniest person at the party. I want to be the one who thinks, who plans. I want to be recognized. Maybe I want to be the leaders at the BSU. But whatever it is, that is not what brings contentment. And that is not what pleases God, a love to be first. Maybe you want to be recognized in your sports ability. Maybe you're very athletic and you want to be recognized in that. Or maybe you're not very athletic and you wish that you could be recognized for being athletic. And then the third area where people look for contentment or where people deal with discontentment is the providence of God, circumstances. And basically that is just somebody who wants life to be comfortable, who wants life to be easy. It may be that your parents don't have a lot of money. And so everybody's signing up for the Glen, but you can't sign up right now because you don't have any money. It may be that your parents are divorced and you wish that at Christmas you could go home to a family like somebody else's family. You wish your parents walked with God like other people's parents you know. 1 Samuel 8 tells us about when Samuel is getting ready to die. And the people come to him and they say, hey, Samuel, you're getting ready to die, and what we want is we want a king, like all the other nations have. When they said that, give us a king, that displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, listen to all the people are saying to you. It is not you they've rejected, Samuel. It is me. And so go ahead and tell them that they can have their king, but tell them that this is what their king will do to them. He will take your sons and make them serve with the king's chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some will be assigned to be commanders of thousands. some 50s, and others to plow his ground, reap his harvest, make weapons of war for his chariots. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and give them to his officials. He will take a tenth of your flock, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, and the Lord will not answer you. But the people refused to listen to Samuel. They refused to hear what God said would happen if they had a king. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles. The Israelites looked at all the other nations and they had a king and they thought, man, what we need is a king. We need a king to lead us. Well, God had led them. God had helped them win over many nations. God had done exactly what a king would do and more, but that's what they wanted. And a lot of times we look at our circumstances and compare them to somebody else's circumstances and say, man, this is what I need. This is what I want. The problem with that is God made you and he made me. And he knows exactly what each one of us needs. And he knows if you need what so-and-so has or if you don't. And if you get that, if it will hurt you, if it will harm you, or if it will help you. Probably all of us have met people that when we've met them, we've thought, man, that person has it all together. They are very attractive. They have all the money they want. It looks like life was handed to them on a silver platter. And it's kind of like Marilyn Monroe. She had everything that we probably could have ever thought would have been good. And she committed suicide. Because what we look at and think, man, they have everything. A lot of times they don't have it. They don't have a lot of things. They're not happy. They're not walking with God. And so when you're tempted to think, well, they have it all, or they have what I want, remember, God made you, and he knows exactly what you need. And he made me, and he knows exactly what I need. Discontentment is a basic questioning of God's goodness. God is going to rip me off. God has ripped me off. God will rip me off. And we don't believe that God really cares for us. Some of the consequences of somebody who's discontent is that they're not free to do what they wanted. They're not free to do what they were meant to do or what they were made to be because they are so consumed about getting what they think will meet their needs that they can't focus on what they really want to do or what they really want to be. It consumes your thinking. Another consequence of a discontent person is their attitude. They're mad at God. God, you ripped me off. You are not fair to me. I want this, I need this, and you're not giving it to me. And what is the deal? Maybe you deal with self-pity in that. Man, I really need that. Why isn't God giving it to me? God's giving it to everybody else. He's not giving it to me. Poor me. God's forgotten me. What that can lead to is bitterness. And bitterness can lead to a lot of physical problems. There's a clinic in Fort Worth that is studying the relationship between bitterness and cancer. And that's pretty extreme to me. But that is why we need to make sure that day by day we are learning how to be people who are content. Another consequence of somebody who's discontent is you're probably pretty lonely. Who wants to be friends with somebody who complains? Who wants to be friends with somebody who feels sorry for themselves or is mad at God? I don't like to spend a lot of time around this kind of people. They're kind of lonely. Well, let's look at somebody who's content. Some of the characteristics of somebody who's content is that their goal in life is their relationship with God. They want to know God, and their focus is not on anything. It's not on possessions. It's not on how good their circumstances are or their position. It's not even on being content, but it's on God. And that is the object of affection for them. Matthew 6 says, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be." And treasures in that verse means the object of your affection. So where our affection is, where our goals are, need to be God. We need to see the eternal perspective, not the immediate. We need to think long range. What is going to last? Is being comfortable going to last? Well, I may be comfortable today, but I may not be comfortable tomorrow. Life may be pretty easy today, but what about tomorrow? Our questions need to be, what is going to last for eternity? We need to see that big picture. A second characteristic of someone who's content is that they're content for today. They're not worried about tomorrow, trying to figure out what's going to happen when they graduate or how much money they're going to make, or they're not worried about last year, how good last year was. Matthew 6:34, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. We need to be content for today. That doesn't mean we don't need to plan for tomorrow or think for tomorrow, but we don't need to be worried about tomorrow and wish it was tomorrow. Okay? They also are people who are faithful to do what God has called them to do. God has given all of us gifts. He's given us all positions, and we need to be faithful to that. We need to be faithful, not worried about being first, but being faithful. And we need to be people who are grateful, not grumblers, but grateful. Contentment is something that is learned, which encourages me because it means that it's available for all of us. All of us can learn how to be content. Paul, when he wrote that he was content, you know, if I was Paul in jail where he wrote Philippians, I would have said, you know, here I am in jail and it's so big and so tall and the jailer's mean to me and the food is terrible and, or, you know, it's great and I got to see one of my friends. He didn't do any of that. What he did, I mean, he mentioned in two verses that he was in jail. And he didn't go on about his circumstances because his heart was focused on God. Jerry Bridges would define contentment. It is one of the most distinguishing traits of the godly person, because a godly person has his heart focused on God rather than possessions, position, or power. The contented person experiences the sufficiency of God's provision for his need and the sufficiency of God's grace for his circumstances. You know, the Israelites were well provided for. Their needs were met. They had clothes, they had food, they had water. God provided all those for them. And he also gave them the grace to go through the desert trusting him, to go through the desert to learn the lessons he wanted them to learn. But they didn't do that. Contentment means enough or self-sufficient. Like the term for God El Shaddai, the God who is enough. Okay, and the three areas that we talked about where people are discontent in possessions, position, and providence, we'll look at those for people who are content. In possessions, Habakkuk 3:17 and 18 says, though the fig tree does not bud and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stall, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Savior. I mean, Habakkuk was talking about the basics of life. If there is no food in the field, if there are no animals in the pen, I will rejoice in God. If my needs are not met, and God says our needs will be met, he says, I will rejoice in God. His heart was fixed to rejoice in God. Hebrews 13:5 in the Amplified is a long verse, and I want to read it to you. It says, let your character or moral disposition be free from the love of money, including greed, lust, and craving for earthly possessions, and be satisfied with your present circumstances and with what you have. For God has said, I will not in any way fail you, nor give you up, nor leave you without support. I will not in any degree leave you helpless, nor forsake you, nor let you down, nor relax my hold on you. That's Hebrews 13:5. That is someone who has decided that life is not made up of possessions, of a little bit more, a little bit better, but God is their satisfaction. God is the one they look to. Psalms 119:36 says, turn my heart toward your statutes and not toward selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from worthless things. Renew my life according to your word. The psalmist was praying that God would turn his heart from selfish gain, from the desires of the world, for possessions, and he would turn it towards himself. A content person is content with their position. They have come to believe and they know that their role is important, that the gifts that God has given them are important. Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, and 1 Corinthians 14 talks about how the gifts of the body work together. And though some gifts are more upfront, some gifts are more recognized, we all need each other. We are all important. And if anybody lets down on his part of the gift, we all suffer. Someone who is content will go ahead and deal with the fact that maybe they aren't going to be the person who's up front or the person who's seen or the person who's really looked to as the leader, but they will be faithful to what God has called them to do. They'll be faithful to the gift that God has given to them to develop it, and they'll be faithful to do what they can do. Circumstances. I'm content in the circumstances God has given me. Now, what if you went home tonight after Vespers and you got a phone call? And the phone call, maybe you're a junior, you have one more year of school left, and you are looking forward to getting out. And the phone call comes in, and it's bad news. Maybe your dad's business has failed. Maybe one of your parents have health problems. But for some reason, you have to go home. You have to drop out. And who knows if you'll be able to come back. Well, I don't know about you, but probably my first reaction would not be one of real excitement. You know, here I had planned a couple years of my life, and it's just kind of thrown out the window, and my plans are really changed. This same type of thing happened to Mary in one sense when an angel came to her and said that the Holy Spirit is going to come on you, and you're going to have the Son of God. Well, that was a real honor and a real privilege. But I wonder, for me, I would have panicked. And I would have thought, my next 2 years of life, the next 15 years of my life are totally changed. My dreams may be thrown out the window. What I wanted to do, where I wanted to go, may be totally devastated. Let me read Mary's response to you. This is right after the angel tells her that. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. And the angel left her. She took a real surprising news and received it graciously and received it trusting God, that God was going to work through it. I mean, it was certainly new news, but trusting that God would work through that. The benefits to somebody who is content is you are free to pursue life as it was meant to be. You are not consumed in your thinking. And godliness with contentment is great gain, is what 1 Timothy tells us. The steps to contentment is the first thing you need to do if you haven't done is to stop and to decide that you are going to choose to live life like it was supposed to be lived. You are going to choose to walk with God, be obedient, and give your life away. Within that, you're also going to choose to believe the truth. No matter how hard it is, no matter what happens, you've made that choice. Then the second thing is to pray. Excuse me. Pray that God would really show you if you're dealing with discontentment. Show you where you're dealing with discontentment. And then get somebody else to pray with you for support. Sometimes when I know that I'm coming into a hard situation or I'm dealing with some problems, there are two friends I call. They are faithful to pray for me. And I know that there are things that I don't have to deal with because they're praying. James 4:6 says, God gives grace to the humble. And when I call somebody and say, I think I'm about to have problems, would you please pray for me? Then I know that I can look to God and say, I have asked someone to pray for me, and I want to really receive the grace you have for me to deal with this. A lot of times, we choose to do something else besides pray. When the disciples were in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus said, I want you to pray so you'll not enter into temptation. And the disciples, it says, they slept due to sorrow. They could have prayed so they wouldn't have entered into temptation, but they chose to escape. They were sorrowful. They didn't know what was going on, and so they slept. And basically, they were not ready when the big test came. They failed. And so what we need to do is make sure that we don't escape, but that we pray. Then the fourth thing to do is, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You need to make sure that you are thinking the truth. Discontentment starts because of wrong thought patterns. One of the main thought patterns will be, God is ripping me off. And it may not be that blatant, and it may be disguised, but that's probably one of the ones you'll get. God is going to rip me off, or he is ripping me off. He's not good for me. And you need to catch those thoughts. And not just catch them, but you need to replace them with truth. God is good. Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you, to give a future and a hope." And you need to choose to go. Sometimes, you know, I'll choose to think the right thoughts, and sometimes it gets really hard to do. But go ahead and choose that no matter how long it takes, you will choose the right thoughts. And then maybe what one thing would be good to do is write down the lessons God's trying to teach you. God, I'm really discontent. I'm really trying to deal with contentment. What are you trying to teach me? What lessons do you want me to learn from this? Help me to keep my eyes on you and my goal to walk with you and to be obedient. We're going to spend a couple minutes in application. What I want you to do is to... these are some things you can do. One is to ask God, where am I discontent? Maybe you're not discontent. So if you're not discontent, you need to pray that you don't get into discontentment. But am I discontent in my possessions? Do I want more than I have? Am I discontent in my position? Do I want to be recognized? Do I wish I was smarter? Do I wish people knew how athletic I was? Or do I just not like the circumstance I have, the circumstances that God has put me in? And ask God to show you if you're discontent. And then maybe you need to begin to work through some of these steps. Maybe you need to buy a book and entitle it, "So You Want to Go Back to Egypt." And in it, list the things that God is doing for you, the answers to prayer that he's giving you, the way he's meeting needs. Spend just a couple minutes thinking through an application, and then Ron is going to come lead us in a song.